Welcome to Inside the Draft, a weekly preview of the upcoming NFL Draft with insiders from around the country.
Welcome, everybody. Our fourth installment of Inside the Draft here on Colts.com and the Colts Audio Network. I'm Matt Taylor. Thanks for coming back. I'm joined with Casey Vallier inside the Indiana Union Construction Industry Radio Studio. Free agency in the NFL is in full swing. It's ever ongoing. But the NFL Draft will be upon us in no time. We are officially 4 weeks away. First round action unfolds on Thursday, April 25th. And that's why we're here today. It's another chance to hear from a national insider on the Colts, their needs, and different positions of depth going into this draft. And the Colts currently have 7 picks, 1 in each round, including the 15th overall selection in round number 1. Joining us today, one of our favorites, Luke Easterling, NFL draft analyst for Athlon Sports. Check him out on Twitter, at Luke Easterling, all one word there, and athlonsports.com. Luke, always good to have you back this time of year talking draft. And like I said, we're a month away from the draft. How geeked up are you? You start getting amped up right now. The combine's over. Most of the pro days are in the books as well. It's go time here.
Yeah, it really is, man. This is like a month-long Christmas Eve for those of us that love this process. And, again, are lucky enough to do it for a job, too. I look back at how excited I was when I was a kid when this time of year would come around, and that really hasn't changed now that I do it for a living. It's pretty cool, man. But, yeah, I love every bit of it. There's always that, you know, once you get within a month, you're a little bit frantic. You know, you're like, oh, we still have a bunch of this stuff to get done. And,
right.
And it's quite a bit of hay to get into the barn. But I love every bit of it, man. It's so cool. And the draft process as a whole, it's so much fun. All the fan bases get to be involved and everybody gets to be hopeful for the upcoming season.
Yeah.
You get to see all these players realizing, you know, lifelong dreams to make it to the league. There's so much about the draft that I think has always made it such a fun event for really everybody attached to the league. And I think that's why so many people get so excited about it, why it's become such a big event for everybody.
How hard is it for you? I mean, not to mention, you know, the GMs and the scouts, you know, the front office personnel that are, you know, pulling the trigger on these draft picks. But how hard is it for you to not get paralysis by analysis this time of year? Because like we just said, combine's over. All the film has been watched. You know, how hard is it now that most of the analysis is over, not to overthink things, despite the fact that we still have, you know, 3-4 weeks before we get to the first round on Thursday night?
Yeah, I think honestly, you know, the best thing for people in my line of work to do this time of year is to kind of understand and clearly define what we're doing throughout the process, right? Because like you said, so much of the work is done in terms of evaluating who the players are and what they can do. I think this time of year, it's important to articulate to our readers, our listeners, that the changes that happen in the way we present the information nowadays, this time of year, it's always about what we're learning about how the teams view these guys, right? That's the big difference is, you know, I can create a big board and make, you know, give you the top 300 players that I think, you know, rank in a certain way from a big picture standpoint. But that's so far removed and so different from what each individual team is doing in their own draft rooms, right? You have 32 very different ways of looking at these prospects, 32 different schemes, 32 different sets of team needs, 32 different, you know, where is our team in their current state? You know, are we contending? Are we rebuilding? There's so many different things that impact, you know, how those team boards are stacked, and also information that the teams are privy to that we're not in the media in terms of medical evaluations and, you know, interviews behind the scenes and all the research that they do. So, you know, this time of year, I think for those of us that cover the event and cover the league, it's more about trying to find out information about how the teams are viewing certain guys and what could happen at each pick than it is really changing anything about how we view the players and the prospects themselves. And that's, again, part of the fun of the draft process is marrying those two things together and seeing how it all plays out on draft weekend.
Now, Luke, you talk about all of those pieces coming together, and one of the big dominoes that just recently fell was the Bears trading Justin Fields, essentially now declaring Caleb Williams is definitely going to be our guy, which is, you know, kind of the favorite to go there at one. When you look at the other teams that are quarterback needy, this is kind of Colts specific in a way, because the Colts, arguably with Anthony Richardson, aren't going in that direction at 15, but it seems like there's so many quarterback needy teams. Where do you think this draft is going to start? Because it looks like it might go 1, 2, 3, 4. Is there another team that might slide up there and take another quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, I think the team that would slide up to get the next quarterback would be the fourth one, right? I think whoever it is, again, we assume Caleb Williams is going one, but those next three, Jaden Daniels from LSU, Drake May from North Carolina, and now J.J. McCarthy from Michigan, which, again, everybody will see, you know, oh, J.J. McCarthy's flying up the draft board. This is really just the media catching up to the fact that the league has always viewed him very highly. And that's what it means this time of year when someone's rising up the board. It means all of us in the media are just catching up to what has always been the case within the league circles. So, you know, those four guys going top four, top five would be historic, first of all. But also, man, you speak about the Colts not being in that boat in terms of needing a quarterback. If you are a team that is picking in the top 10 to 15, you are ecstatic about the development of seeing four quarterbacks come off the board in the first four or five. I mean, you could see the best players in the draft outside of the quarterbacks still on the board at five. You know, look at those teams that are up there, even Arizona at four if they stay there, five if it's the Chargers, whoever doesn't trade out of that spot with whoever's looking for a quarterback. And you've got Marvin Harrison Jr. sitting there at four or five when he's widely regarded, I think, as the best overall player in this draft. You got the tackles. You know, you got Joe Alt there. We could go an entire top 10 without a defensive player.
Right.
I think there's really maybe one spot where a defensive player might make sense, and that barring any other moves. So, you know, I think that the draft does start with, you know, who moves up for that fourth quarterback, assuming the first three go in the top three picks. How do those top three receivers come off the board? Do they generate any movement with teams trying to trade up and get them? And then, you know, the receiver class and the quarterback class is so elite at the top, right? You got three to four quarterbacks. Top three receivers are fantastic. Those second tiers have some intriguing guys at both positions too, but how long will teams wait, right? If you're Denver at 12, if you're Vegas at 13, do they take Bo Nix or Michael Penix Jr.? Do they wade into that second tier of quarterbacks? And if you're in the top, you know, 15 or 20 after those top three receivers are gone, do you take a receiver that high knowing that you might be able to get a similar player in the second round because that class is so deep? I think that's what's intriguing to me about those position groups.
Now, one final thing I want to talk about on the quarterbacks that you mentioned with J.J. McCarthy. Why do you think it's been so, you know, as you talk about this rise here late where NFL circles have already been high on him, why has this been such a late from everybody else on J.J. McCarthy?
I think it's just sample size. I think that when you compare him to the other top quarterbacks in this draft, he's had a phenomenal defense at Michigan. He had a very run-heavy offense that never really required him to put forth the volume as a passer that all the other top guys in this class have. You look at Caleb Williams and Daniels and May and even Nix and Penix Jr. They threw the ball so many more times than J.J. McCarthy had to in that offense,
right.
And where that can be a detriment to his, you know, his draft stock, because you are looking at sample size and there's just not enough there. You know, you want to see opportunities where he is put regularly in positions to put the team on his back to generate the offense through him. And he was more of a distributor, more of a point guard, more of that, you know, Brock Purdy mold of I'm going to take advantage of the talent around me. And I think what we've discovered throughout this process is those flashes of brilliance that he had with the arm talent, with the athleticism, with the decision-making, the accuracy. You know, there were enough of those moments that the NFL, I think, has realized, hey, you know, he may not have had to do that very often,
right.
But when he did, when it was required of him, did he step up? And absolutely he did, especially if you look at the playoff, you look at the plays he made in that Alabama game in the Rose Bowl, and then obviously leading your team to a national championship and an undefeated season. I think those things have carried a lot of weight with the people making the decisions in the league, and I think they see enough there in those moments to be like, hey, that would actually be the rule and not the exception if we put more on his plate and we require more of him in our offense. And I think that's what we've come to learn.
Yeah. Luke, let's center in on the Colts. What are your biggest draft needs that you have for the Colts going into late April?
You know, I think obviously the long-term deal for Michael Pittman Jr. really sets them up well at wide receiver. I'm a big fan of Josh Downs and Alec Pierce still, so I really feel like they've got a strong core at receiver that, you know, if you look back at a lot of mock drafts in January, February, earlier in this process, a lot of them had them going receiver early there at 15. And I think now that they don't have to do that, and they could really wait till day two, maybe if somebody drops to them again, it's a deep class, and they could add some depth there if the talent falls to them. But I really think that the biggest needs are on the defensive side of the ball. I think, you know, barring something like Brock Bowers falling to them at 15 or something like that, where I feel like they could just go pure talent and say, mm-hmm. hey, let's give Anthony Richardson another fun weapon that can help in a different way. I really think you're looking at edge, you know, looking for a pass rusher off the edge. I think you're looking in the secondary. Obviously don't see a safety coming off the board that high in the first round, but I think corner will be a really strong spot for them. We could get to 15 and only have one corner off the board at that point. And so I think the value and the need will really meet in terms of finding an edge rusher, which again, Dallas Turner from Alabama might be the only one off the board at that point. You're talking about Jared Verse from Florida State, Leia Tulatu from UCLA, Chop mm-hmm. Robinson from Penn State. There's a lot of talent there. Corner, Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo, probably gone by then, but Terrion Arnold from Alabama I think would be a great fit. Nate Wiggins from Clemson. Again, I think the match of need and value on the board really points to edge and corner there.
All right, this is an exercise I like to do because you talked about corner, and that's a position that's been highly mocked to the Colts because of everything that you just accurately described. So let's take the top guys, and then you maybe give me the separation between them in terms of how you have them evaluated, if you will. You talked about Mitchell, Terrion Arnold, Nate Wiggins. Let's throw in Kool-Aid McKinstry in there as well. Well, what's the separation from those guys in terms of options for the Colts if they want to go cornerback at pick number 15, knowing that there is a drop-off of that position compared to the depth of talent that might be there later in the draft at wide receiver, per se?
Yeah, for sure. I think, honestly, if I had to rank the position groups in terms of depth, if I'm the Colts, I want to be able to get a top edge rusher first because I really don't think the depth is there on day two at all. I think there's going to be some solid depth at corner, which I'll get to in a second. I think the depth at receiver is going to be ridiculous. I think the only caveat there would be I think a lot of teams at the top of the second round are going to eat up some of that depth in the early second round before the Colts would be able to get one. But edge is where I would want to go in the first round. If I can't get the guy I want, then corner in terms of that separation, I'd feel comfortable getting a guy on day two. But if any of those top three to four guys that again, we've already mentioned, I think Mitchell is probably gone because I think he's the most complete guy who has had the best process, right? When you check the film, it's fantastic. You check the production, it's fantastic, making big plays and limiting big plays. When you check the Senior Bowl tape, he might have been the best overall player at the entire Senior Bowl that whole week. And then you look at the combine, and he dominated the combine as an athlete too. So I think that's why I think he's cornerback one for most people and the most likely to be off the board by 15. Arnold, I think, is, again, a very complete player, very smart, instinctive player that I think would be a great fit for them there. I think those two guys are the top tier at corner for me. I think those two guys are in their own tier. I don't think there's a big gap between the next one, but those are the two guys I would feel most comfortable taking in the top 15, top 10, top 20. Nate Wiggins, you know, when you start to get away from those top guys that are complete, there's always something that kind of holds a guy back, right? And with Nate Wiggins, it's a guy who is tall but doesn't have super long arms, and he's also really, really lean. You know, I mean, I think the combine, he was in the 170s. I know he was up into the 180s at his pro day, which is very, very good. But you're talking about a guy with elite speed, great instincts and ball skills, knows how to make big plays, knows how to find the end zone when he's got the ball in his hands. It's just a matter of can he put on some weight and can he retain the speed that makes him so impactful as a playmaker. I think that's really the caveat with Wiggins. And then with Kool-Aid McKinstry, again, he's dealing with a foot injury now, but he's playing through it. I think he's a guy that scheme-wise, I think he's probably best as kind of an off-coverage, you know, cover three type of guy. I know he's got the tools to be a press guy. The consistency with the technique is what needs to be improved for him there. And the other guy I would throw in there is Cooper DeJean from Iowa.
Okay,
he's kind of a wild card
yep.
because he might be one of the most versatile athletic players in the draft regardless.
Return guy, yeah.
Yeah, but where do you want him? Where is he best?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you really need a classic, you know, put him on the outside and forget about him, let him shut down one side of the field corner, I'm not sure he's your guy. But if you want to be able to move him around and get creative with your defense, he can line up outside, he can line up in the slot, he can line up deep at safety. He played linebacker at times for Iowa. They moved him all over the place. And again, with the new kickoff rule,
right.
You know, kind of prioritizing and giving you an opportunity to highlight the return ability of your players. The fact that he was a big play return guy, like you said, for the Hawkeyes, could play into that evaluation as well. So he's not as much of a traditional prospect in that he's just a pure outside corner, but a creative defensive coordinator would really want to get their hands on a guy like that.
Now, when you talk about defensive end, that could be an area where you mentioned the Colts could target there at 15. A guy like Latu Latu out of UCLA with the injury concern, how much of a red flag is that? Because it looked like once he came back from the neck injury, he appeared to be, you know, totally fine and had a very productive couple years.
Yeah, he really did. And I think he's the defensive version of Michael Penix Jr. this year, where it's, you know, the injury thing happened earlier in his career, and since he, you know, he's gone a while now without having any issues with it, much like Penix has, right? And so I think the issue is for me, it's, again, we don't have access to the medicals, right? It's really going to come down to teams doing their own due diligence, having their own doctors look at it and say, hey, this is, you know, something we don't think is going to be an issue. Or it's something that, you know, if it is an issue, everybody is at risk of injury, right? You play a physical sport. You could take a guy who's never been injured before at all, and he could still get injured. So, you know, you have to balance all of those things. When you're talking about the player, I mean, if we weren't talking about this and he hadn't had that issue, or the film tells us he's probably a top 10 pick. I mean, he's probably the most polished edge rusher in terms of just getting to the quarterback with his hand usage, his technique, his pass rushing moves are so advanced for a guy coming out of college that I think it kind of overcomes. He's not the athlete that Dallas Turner is, but he is such a technician and knows how to set up his blockers to fail. I mean, he makes offensive tackles look silly on film all the time. And so I think if you're comfortable with the medicals, you're comfortable with the fact that, like you said, that had happened in the past, but he's stayed healthy and he's been dominant ever since he's been back on the field at UCLA. So I think if the medicals are comfortable, him going in the top 15 shouldn't be crazy at all, because the film backs that up.
Now, Luke, final thing from me. I want to talk about a guy who a year ago at this time, he was thought to be maybe the top, you know, outside of Marvin Harrison Jr., one of the top receivers in Keon Coleman. What happened to Keon Coleman, and why is he not thought of as one of these top five can't-miss wide receiver prospects?
You know, I think it really just comes down to questions about his pure long speed. You know, I think obviously you've got the size, the physicality. He wins at the catch point really, really well. He's going to be dominant in the red zone. You know that. He's going to be a great possession receiver. I think he's a faster football player than he is a track star, which I think is borne out by all the data that we can get at now, right, where we can track guys, you know, miles per hour during the game and on plays, as opposed to just running a 40-yard dash. So, you know, I still think he could sneak into the first round, probably coming off the board early in the second if I had to make a bet.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's about that. I think it's about, you know, being more polished and consistent with his route running. A lot of those bigger receivers have some trouble creating separation at the top of their routes against some of those DBs that are just so fluid and able to click and close so fast. I think when you've got a bigger, more physical guy, he does those things well as a big receiver and can be open even when he's covered, so to speak. I think that when you compare him to that second tier of guys, you know, Brian Thomas has the size, but he also has elite speed. He is also a field stretching guy. You compare him to, you know, the two Texas guys, A.D. Mitchell and Xavier Worthy, and obviously they have the speed over him. And he, again, very sharp route runners, very fluid route runners who can create separation and then make plays after the catch. I think that's what probably knocks him back behind those guys is that lack of elite speed, and he's just not quite as polished and sharp as a route runner at his size.
Casey, I feel like we can't do a draft interview with Luke without asking him about Brock Bowers. I mean, everything about the draft has to be about Brock Bowers. I mean, you mentioned him in passing there, Luke, you know, in terms of if he's available there at 15 for the Colts, you got to think long and hard about drafting him at that position. So let me give you a true or false, Luke, and then I'll just have you go at it there. Brock Bowers, a slam dunk. He's going to be one of the best tight ends in the NFL next season as a rookie. True or false on that, Luke?
True. I think that he, again, as long as he doesn't suffer the fate of Kyle Pitts the last few years, where he ends up in an offense that just has no idea what to do with him, which is still confuses me. I think there's just no way. And again, if you're investing a top 10, top 15 pick in that guy, you'd like to think you have a plan to maximize that talent. But again, you know, Atlanta with Kyle Pitts kind of tells us that doesn't always happen. But no, I think when you're talking about the player, you're talking about a top 5 to 7 overall talent in this class. And then again, that's saying something considering some of the talent we have at the other positions. But I mean, he reminds me so much of George Kittle, man. He reminds me so much. Again, even George Kittle wasn't George Kittle coming out. He was a fifth round pick because he just didn't have a ton of opportunities to catch the football in that Iowa offense. Not the case in Georgia, obviously.
Yeah.
But honestly, I think what reminds me so much about Kittle is that he is also a really good blocker. You have to be in that Georgia offense, right? You've got to be able to block or you're not going to be on the field, even as a pass catcher. So he's just so versatile. You can line him up and not kind of give anything away with your formations, regardless of where you line him up. He's such a great route runner. He creates separation, and he is just an absolute nightmare after the catch. He's not easy to tackle. He eliminates angles. He's got enough speed. Again, he's very different from Kyle Pitts in that Kyle Pitts is just a really tall, lanky, slightly bigger wide receiver. You know, I feel like Bowers at his size, he's 6'4", 245. He's kind of an undersized tight end by today's standards. But he's so good after the catch. He's so smooth as a player. And again, he's so versatile. He can give you the contributions in the run game to be able to not give anything away with your formations. And I just feel like, again, projecting him to the Colts in particular and what he could bring to that offense with Richardson, with Taylor, with Pittman back, with, again, those other two young receivers in Pierce and Downs, that piece, putting it into that offense with the way that the coaching staff and the scheme has proven they can get the most out of their guys. I would just love to see that. Like, I play fantasy football, and like from a dynasty fantasy football perspective,
come on now,
Brock Bowers in that offense, man, sign me up for that all day.
All right, we know where Luke's going in terms of fantasy football there at the top of the draft. That's Luke Easterling, NFL draft analyst for Athlon Sports, and you're based in Tampa, and doing some digging on you there, Luke, on the dark web last night, sniffing around on the Athlon Sports website, athlonsports.com. I came across your bio. I don't know how long ago this was or how applicable it is now, but I read where you play the drums. Is that right? Are you a musician? You play the drums as well, Luke? Come on now.
I do, man. My brothers and I, we had a rock band down here in Tampa about a decade
Love
ago.
It.
We recorded an album. It's out there. We've put out music before. I still got the drums in the garage, and thankfully my neighbors are really kind about it. But
nice.
I still light them up pretty often, man.
That a boy.
Something I love to do.
All right, what kind of drum set? What brand are we talking here? You got some Tamas or what?
No, I have a PDP X7, so it's a 7-piece.
There you go.
I've got these beautiful Meinl dark custom cymbals that are like black and gold, man. They're beautiful. I love my kit so much, man.
That's awesome. What was the name of your band?
The band's called Despite Distance. You can look up YouTube. There's a bunch of fun live videos of us having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Great time in my life, man. I miss it a lot.
That's awesome. We got a regular Alex Van Halen here, or like Lee Von Helm on the podcast as well. Again, one more time, Despite Distance, is that right? Despite Distance?
That's it.
There you go, baby. We're going to check that out on YouTube and Spotify. We're going to lead in with that next time we have you on here in the podcast. That's good stuff.
You're welcome to do it. I have your full artistic rights to the music to use on the pod. Anyway.
We'll just ask for permission. Don't sue us, Luke. That's not what we're in for here. This is a happy conversation that we like to do every year regarding the draft. But now we can talk some music next time we have you on, which will hopefully be soon. Luke Easterling, NFL draft analyst for Athlon Sports. He's a drumming sensation. He's the Dave Grohl of the Tampa area and a Ringo Starr disciple. Luke, thanks so much for the time, man. You're a good sport about everything. The insight's amazing, and check out your work at athlonsports.com. Enjoy the rest of draft season, and leave your phone on. We'd like to do this again soon, if you don't mind.
Hey, always a pleasure, guys. You enjoy it, too.